to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, the stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and I'm joined in the studio by Local Talk engineer, Becca Brown. Good morning, Becca.
Good morning, Greta. How are you today?
I'm okay. Today's show covers two, shall we say, innovative, funky, fun cultural events in Ames. And the people who dream them up. One of these events is for kids, one for adults. First, we'll be talking with Sandra Luft, who has brought a cultural movement called Kidical Mass to our community. That is Kidical, K-I-D. Movement being the key word here. Kidical Mass is about getting kids on bicycles for family-friendly bike rides in the community, creating memories and shaping the next generation of carbon-neutral commuters. In the next half of the show, in the second half of the show, we'll talk to Lindsay Nissen and a couple of the artists she has organized for a unique public art event in downtown Ames called Art Vacancy. But first, let's turn to the news in Ames. Yesterday morning, we heard that Mayor Ann Campbell of Ames had been taken by ambulance to Mary Greeley Hospital. A subsequent press release indicated that she had suffered from a heart attack. The press release went on to say that once she arrived at the hospital, an angioplasty procedure was performed to address an arterial blockage. And this was according to Mark Hamilton, Campbell's brother who lives in Ames. Hamilton says, "We are grateful to all the people who stepped in to assist Anne during the crisis. The surgery went well. And while she's still in critical condition, we are optimistic about her long-term recovery." So that's Mayor Ann Campbell. Ann first served as our mayor in 2006 and ran unopposed the next two elections, including last November. And before she was mayor, she spent 16 years on council. As mayor, a part-time elected position, her primary role is to run city council meetings. Last night, there was a city council meeting that was presided over by Matthew Goodman, the mayor pro tem. And when I visited City Hall yesterday, people were certainly shaken by the news of this event. Her secretary told me that the incident had occurred while Anne was out doing errands in the public, and that her daughter, who lives in Minnesota, and her son from Washington, D.C., were on their way to be with her. So the news is that Ann Campbell had suffered from a heart attack yesterday on Tuesday and is in critical condition, but there is reason for optimism. The weather today, Wednesday, is cooler than it was yesterday, with highs not quite reaching 60. They say rain is possible. Tomorrow, Thursday, definitely looks like rain. Friday is scheduled to be a perfect sunny day, high of 77, and that sunshine is hoped to carry on over to Saturday with maybe a few clouds. This is good news for my next guest, Sandra Luft. Sandra is the mother of two children, aged 2.5 and 5 months. She is also the coordinator of Kidical Mass bike rides in Ames. Kidical Mass, it's spelled K-I-D-I-C-A-L. Tell us what this is.
Hi, good morning. Kidical Mass is a bike ride for families and kids in the community. It's a safe, legal bike ride just in order to get kids moving, families out on bikes. We usually do a leisurely 3 miles from one park to another destination, such as another park or the farmer's market, or you've gone to a coffee shop for hot chocolate at the end when it's cold outside. And it's just a way to get kids out and moving and parents to meet each other. And
these bike rides occur in Ames at the end of each month?
That's right. It's during the warmer months, since we do have a pretty brutal winter, so we don't take to the streets on those months. But this April, we start the Saturday at 10 a.m. We meet for our first ride of the season, and we'll continue, hopefully, through October. Last year, our last ride was in October, and we did a Halloween-themed ride and encouraged everyone to dress up for the bike ride and wear costumes, and ended up with treats at the Cupcake Emporium downtown. So hopefully it'll carry us through late fall again this year as well.
That sounds like so much fun. So this is the first ride of the season.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
April 26th, this Saturday.
Yep, and we always meet every last Saturday of the month at 10 a.m. at Brookside Park. We gather there, and then we take off from there to a different destination each time.
Okay, and what is the route this time?
I think we're going to start out with just a simple ride through Old Town neighborhoods, ending up at Banshell Park. And there the kids can play, and adults generally bring a picnic blanket and some snacks, and we hang out afterwards for a little while.
Okay, and the name of your organization certainly raises some eyebrows. It's interesting. Can you talk about that?
Sure. And that's why I said earlier it's a safe and legal ride, because there are some connotations surrounding critical mass, which is what the name is modeled after. Critical mass is a well-known bike ride that takes cyclists to the street in mass numbers in order to both protest and raise advocacy for bicycles sharing the road with cars. And there's always been some drama surrounding that, and whether that's actually productive or actually counterproductive. But critical mass, even though it borrows the name and plays on it, is intended to not be controversial at all, but just fun and safe, and just borrows the same idea of a mass group of cyclists on the road, safety in numbers, and allows often parents who may feel a little nervous about taking their kids out onto the streets to experience what it's like to actually ride not just on the sidewalk or not just down the block around your neighborhood, but through the city from one spot to another.
Oh, so you actually take the street. You're not on the sidewalk.
No, even though it is legal in Ames to ride on a sidewalk, and I think that's a really good option for when you're around busy roads like Lincoln or Duff, certainly. But we take neighborhood roads, so we'll usually go through, like, the Roosevelt neighborhood. We go up from Brookside into the Roosevelt neighborhood and cross over into the Old Town. So we stick to low-traffic roads, and we do stay on the street, and we have only experienced very courteous drivers who usually, if we're at a stop sign and a car is stopped and there's a group of 30 cyclists, they'll wait until we're all through and usually wave at us. And so it's been a very positive experience so far.
Great. Describe the scene a bit more for me and the audience. How many people are we talking? What ages?
Mm-hmm. Ages vary. The children, the youngest ones, are in bike trailers and being carried by their parents on bike seats and not yet necessarily mobile themselves. And then the older kids will be, I don't know, anywhere up to age 13, I think, are our oldest, and ride on their own. We had one cyclist on a balance bike do the whole ride, and I don't know if you know balance bikes, they don't have pedals, so he used his legs to propel himself forward through the whole thing, which is why I say we ride at a leisurely pace where everyone can keep up, regardless of age or skill level. And the parents and grandparents, and we've had some of the local bike shop owners come and support us and ride with us. So again, all kinds of people join. And what was your other question? how many? That's right. On rainier days, we've had as few as just three families on colder, rainier days, and that's when we usually duck into a coffee shop to warm up afterwards with a hot chocolate. On beautiful, bright, sunny days, we have as many as just over 30 people. And we see tandem bikes and people pulling bikes behind them. We had the longest setup where a family of two on a tandem bike, so two adults on one bike, followed by two more kids attached in the back through the kind of bike that attaches to an adult bike where the kid pedals, and then another trailer at the end. So four people wide. So we have all kinds of configurations.
That's so interesting. That's something new for me.
Yeah.
All of the different hardware that's available.
Yep.
So you have been doing this. You did it 1 year just last year, and this is your second year?
That's right. This is our second full year, well, will be full year. I started September in 2012, but I started late in the year, so we just had two rides, and then it became too cold, and then last year was our first full year.
And at that time, your little one was probably just on the back of your bike, am I right? Or in the
front
trailer?
Front of the bike. When we started out, we have a front of the bike seat in iBert, a little green seat that rides in the front by the handlebars. And she started at 8 months old riding in that. As soon as she was big enough to sit up and support the weight of the helmet, and she loved it from the start.
What motivated you to get out and get others out with you?
Sure. Well, it's a longer question, but to sum it up, I came back from Europe. I spent a year in Germany doing research for my dissertation. And while there, everybody bikes. I was in Munich. It's such a bike-friendly city. Everybody walks, bikes. And I was really inspired by this very active, outdoorsy lifestyle. And I came back and in the Midwest, felt there were certain challenges to kind of adopting the same lifestyle. And so I took to the internet to find inspiration and found all these bike blogs written by commuters, not athletes, people who just regularly bike around every day to get to the grocery store, to get to wherever they're going. And I especially found it very inspiring to find other women blogging about this because I wanted to know, how can this fit my lifestyle? And then once I had children, that question changed again. How can I do this with children on the bike? And then that's how I came across all these blogs written by parents who were very active on bikes with their kids. And many of them participated in critical mass rides in different cities of the U.S. Many much bike-friendlier cities like Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington. I just sort of followed that model and thought, I know we don't have as huge of a bike scene here in Ames, but we are a very bike-friendly community in that we have lots of parks, we have lots of trails, lots of people are very active and outdoorsy around here. And I thought, surely there's got to be an audience for this. And so I just thought, well, I'll just see what happens if I try to get a ride together.
Okay. And you started first organizing with your friends.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
I spoke with one of those friends. Mm-hmm. She herself has organized a baby book club grew into a toddler book club.
Yeah, we're a very active bunch.
So how did you all find each other?
Most of us in our group found each other while pregnant, actually taking prenatal yoga downtown with Ruth Ann at the yoga studio in Ames. And all kind of had the same ideas about how we wanted to parent and what we wanted to do with our kids. So we stayed friends past the pregnancy. Some of us found each other at the library. There's a lot of really great programs the library puts on. I think we just have a really vibrant community here with lots of resources. And where we didn't find the resources, we thought, well, we'll just create it, like the book club and the critical mass ride.
Right. It's a do-it-yourself kind of mentality. And
right.
And also, you have a blog, and she has a blog about the Baby Book Club. Describe your blog.
Well, I used to blog about just biking, getting around when I was trying to figure it all out. I found it very useful to write about it and to connect with lots of other people doing the same thing across the U.S. So I wrote about bicycle maintenance and especially vintage bikes, which I got really excited about, and how to maintain those. And also just about the very everyday practical items, like how do you carry your groceries by bike on your way home from work, or how do you dress professionally to work on a college campus while riding a bike and commuting. I wrote about that for about 2.5 years, and then I felt like, I've got this.
Okay.
I no longer need this, but I now do maintain the Ames Critical Mass blog. So we have, it's amescriticalmass.wordpress.com, and we have a Facebook page and a blog, and I share photos from our rides and flyers for upcoming events and information about the ride.
Okay. Well, I think we're ready for the next segment of our show, where I wanted to provide an opportunity for a little introspection, maybe, for our listeners. It struck me that bicycles are such a vital part of childhood, and many childhood memories and even your sort of childhood identity can almost be shaped around you and your bicycle. And so also I reflected on the fact that the Rudolf Steiner, in his observations of children, these are observations that are used in the Waldorf mode of teaching, noted that children in their preschool years are just kinetic. That's they're driven by activity, moving their bodies. So I went around town and I gathered various Ames residents' memories of their first bike, of biking as a kid, and their experience also of, as a parent, teaching their children how to ride bicycles.
So when I was 8 years old, I really wanted this bike for my birthday. It was a yellow bike. It had a banana seat. And on the banana seat was a rainbow. And I had seen this bike in the store and begged for it. My parents were like, oh, no, it's way too expensive. You can't have that bike. And so on the morning of my birthday, I was in the living room, and I was asking what we were going to do for my birthday and what I was getting for my birthday. And my mom says, look outside. Look out the front. And there's my dad riding on the sidewalk, pedaling crazily, because he's, of course, you know, an adult, on my yellow bike with a rainbow seat. I was pretty excited.
Well, my first bike was in 1973. It had a banana seat, and it was yellow. I didn't like the bike, but I liked that I had a bike.
My first bike was a Huffy, I'm sure, and it was pretty frilly. I think it had the little things that click on the spokes as you ride along and the handlebar tassels.
My first bike was a big wheel. It was white and pale pink and pale blue, and I loved it. It had little fringe on the handlebars, and I would take, I had a very giant size Snoopy doll that would ride with me. And we would just go circles around our apartment over and over again. Some of these bikes, the boys of my generation will know this, there's a boys' version that has a little brake on the side that you can go so fast, and then you pull on this brake and you spin. And it's the best feeling in the world. And we had some gravel on the parking lot part of the building, and I didn't have the brake, but if I had pushed the brakes hard enough just on the pedals, I could have the same effect. And it was amazing.
So they made a girl's big wheel that had no brake, and they had a boy's big wheel, same model basically, but it had the handbrake.
Yeah, that's what I remember. And the boy's one was red and yellow, I think, and I don't know why that distinction. I could still brake, but I didn't have the side spiely-do. But whenever I could find one, a boy who had one, I always used it.
I remember my best friend lived in the unit below me, and we would go ride our bike in the parking lot next door. And we would just ride and ride around in circles, and we would have done it all night if our parents hadn't stopped us.
My bike looks like a peace sign, like some there's like peace signs on it and hearts.
Do you remember your first bike?
Yes, with training wheels, but now I don't ride them with training wheels. My first bike was only like a year ago, I think. 2 years ago.
2 years.
We were lucky enough that my son's grandmother gave him a balance bike, which he called his Scoot, and he got that at about 2 years old, and he scooted on his balance bike for 2 years, and his sisters were learning how to ride regular bikes, and they're 2 years older than him. And so we got him a bike because he wanted a big boy bike, and he refused to have the training wheels on. He insisted that he learn how to ride the big boy bike right away, and he got on the bike, and he rode the bike the very first time without training wheels, and his sisters were still learning. So we're thankful for the Scoot bike.
It's not a good story. I literally just ran into a pole. I didn't know how to steer.
Your first time riding a bike?
well, one of the times when my dad took me out to teach me how to ride a bike.
I've had many bikes. I've had a Redline, which is motocross. That was my seventh grade bike. And I had to pay that off. It took me 9 months. And I started delivering papers. There was one summer I did summer school in Cincinnati. And I had lived in Arizona, so I didn't know that it was so hilly and so different, really, to ride a bike in. And I took a 10-speed, and every day I'd go through this kind of a poor neighborhood, and there was a lot of guys and some women standing out in front of their apartments. And they'd call me Flyboy every single day when I'd ride by. They'd say, hey, Flyboy. I didn't see myself that way, but then I found out that that was a good thing. That was like a compliment.
And he would sort of hang on to the seat of the bicycle and get us going and then let go, and we either made it or didn't.
Well, I lived in the country. Actually, I could bike into town. We weren't that far away. And I'd bike to the lake in town or to the swimming pool in the summer. That's what I remember the most.
I don't want them to go around the block without me, but sometimes they do. You know, if they go fast enough, then I don't yell at them, but you know, it's independence, you know, a mode of transportation on their own. You know, that's very liberating for a kid.
My dad and I used to take little evening bike trips just around the area. We would go look at the Charles River. It's something that I have just wonderful, happy memories doing.
And the other thing was, our tradition was that whenever we learned to ride a bike, we got to go into Webb's drugstore on Main Street in Rolfe and have a chocolate malt and milk.
I used to go on long bike rides with my family, and we lived in Arizona. And the sidewalks were a lot better there. There were bike trails everywhere. It was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot. I still ride my bike today, definitely.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. I'm Greta Anderson, your host, and in the studio we have Sandra Luft. She has organized a family-friendly bike ride called Kidical Mass. It happens once a month at the end of the month, and the first ride of the year is coming up on Saturday, April 26th at Brookside Park is where they start.
Yep, at 10 a.m.
At 10 a.m.
We'll meeting.
Mm-hmm. Great. There were so many things, so many memories stirred up from when I was interviewing those folks. And I have a you know, bike story from my youth. It was really, you know, the drama of the training wheels, you know, which were much more common back in the day before people learned about the scoot bikes and so on. You know, my parents refused to take the training wheels off my bike. They were just that anxious. And finally, I think there was a community bike ride, kind of like you're organizing, that took about a 3-mile route, and I rode the whole thing with my training wheels. And they finally, you know, they were anxious about that too. I mean, what if I got tired, you know, halfway through and I was all that distance away from home? But they finally took my training wheels off after that ride. And Becca, our engineer, she's contributing some voice to our show. Becca, do you have a story about biking?
Sort of. We really didn't have bikes growing up. We couldn't really, they didn't fit in our budget as a family. But we had a tricycle that when we were renting our house, we would ride around this really tiny indoor porch that we had. But that's where all of our toys were. So we would, like, create these obstacles and just feel really awesome as kids and go on adventures in our minds, sort of thing.
Yeah, that that theme of circling over and over the same ground, that came up a couple times.
Yeah.
There was also, I was really charmed by people's relationships with their dads. The bike was often mediated by a father figure.
Yeah, that seems to be traditionally the way it went. And now, like I said, there's this emergence of voices of women who are biking and teaching their kids to bike and feeling empowered by the bike, and that's really beautiful as well.
So tell me, Tell us in more detail about some of the bike rides that you've had as part of Kidical Mass.
Yeah, most of our bike rides, as I said, we just meet at the park and bike to another destination. And then a few rides a year, we try to do a little more special. And as I noted, we had a Halloween costume-themed bike ride in the fall. And then our big bike ride that drew a lot of attention and a good turnout was our Books and Bikes tour last July. It started out when I noticed all the little free libraries that popped up around town. We have a few down the road from us and all through the old town. There's one from the Ames Tribune. Started noticing these little free libraries, and I thought it would be very, very exciting to get to show all of our kids who participate all these sources for books. So I paired together with my friend who you mentioned runs the Baby Book Club in Huxley and solicited her help. And we picked a route that took us from Brookside Park past four or five little free libraries and told the kids in advance to bring a book to trade, to swap, and explain to them a little bit what a little free library is, which, as you probably know, is just a little structure that offers a handful of books for free. Anyone can take one, you can bring it back, you can trade it for one you already read, just a way to make reading and books accessible to anyone in the community. And we rode past the little free libraries, and we stopped at several of them, and the kids got really excited about the book boxes, as they call them. And at the end, we stopped at Banshell Park and did a story time reading for all the books, so for all the kids. And so my friend Sarah picked Duck on a Bike, which is a great book for kids about cycling, and also has a lot of animals riding in a group, just like our kids ride in a group, so they got very excited to see these animals in the book. And we read the book, and we hung out and played a little bit afterwards, and it was a really wonderful way to combine both books and bikes, which both sort of have that in common, that they're sort of liberators. They sort of are venues for the imagination to run wild.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've heard other people speaking of this this bike ride that stopped at the Little Free Library. It caused quite a splash.
Yeah, I think a lot of people saw us, and that day we lucked out. It was beautiful outside, so we had a huge turnout, huge group. It was good for us to be able to be seen that way, too, so that more people will hopefully know about the ride and join us. I would love to see as many people come out for the ride as possible. There's no such thing as too big of a crowd.
Yeah, and I think it's really just wonderful what you're doing to bring the community together. Parents of young children can often maybe feel isolated in their family unit if they don't have a church to go to or something like that. And to really build bridges with other people in the community, it sounds like just a wonderful thing that you're doing.
Yeah, it's wonderful to meet other parents with kids similar ages. And it's also a great source of information for parents who, like you said earlier, you know, you didn't even really realize there's all these different ways to bike with your kids, all these configurations and equipment. And it's a great way, too, for parents to come out and say, oh, wow, look at that bike seat. That would work for my child. Or I wish I had known, you know, this was available. So it's a resource on many levels. It's great.
Yeah. So is there anything else you'd like to add, Sandra?
Just come out and join us. Come out this Saturday for the first ride of the year. Brookside Park, 10 a.m. We meet every last Saturday of the month. And check us out on our Facebook page, Ames Kidical Mass, or our blog, ameskidicalmass.wordpress.com. I provide updates on where we'll be riding and our destinations and if we have anything special planned. There'll be another books and bike tour this summer, and I hope to see our group grow and more people come out and join us and have it be a permanent event in Ames.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Sandra, for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, that was Sandra Luft of Ames Kidical Mass.
Bicycle, bicycle, how I love you. just before dark, down rolling hills and into the park. Can you hear the frogs singing? Do you hear the crickets cry? Bicycle, bicycle, away we fly.
Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and we were previously speaking with Sandra Luft of Ames Critical Mass, a cultural event for kids and families in Ames. We are moving on to another cultural event for kids of all ages, especially adults, in Ames called Art Vacancy. Yes. Ames Art Vacancy?
We've just been calling it Art Vacancy, and I guess we could throw Ames on the end there.
Okay, and we're here with the organizer, Lindsay Neeson, and two artists who are participating in this unfiltered, cohesive exhibition in unused spaces in downtown Ames. It features transient, site-specific installation and performance works. So this is a sort of flash mob of art, and it's occurring Thursday, April 24th, between 7 and 9, Friday, April 25th, between 7 and 9 p.m., Saturday, April 26th, between 1 and 4, and Sunday, from 1 to 4. So it's a four-day event featuring temporary art installations and performances.
Yes. We were really looking to bring a certain type of art to Ames that doesn't really have a home right now. So I gathered up all my artist friends and people that I knew who sort of did this new media installation type of work that doesn't necessarily have a big museum. We're not a metropolis here at Ames, and that's typically where this kind of art resides. So it's a pretty exciting event. We're hoping to get a lot of people out. The hours that you mentioned are when all the exhibits will be open, but Ryan, my cohort here, will be having a park on the corner by the loft that will be open extended hours for people to enjoy throughout the weekend, if he wants to maybe say a little bit more about that.
Well, let me introduce the other other two guests. Lindsay Neeson is the chief organizer, I suppose, of Art Vacancy. We also have in the studio Jennifer Drinkwater, an artist, and Ryan Francois, who is putting on a park. What does that mean?
Yeah, so Blockupied is my installation for Art Vacancy, and basically it's a temporary park that'll be occupying a single metered parking spot at Kellogg and Main for the 4 days. So it basically takes an automobile-centered parking spot and transforms it into a space that people will be able to use.
That's fascinating. So will you have furniture installation?
Yeah, so basically it's built up to curb level. There's an AstroTurf base, and then there'll be street furniture that's modular. People will be able to move it around. It's built out of a recycled cardboard and then sealed with driveway sealant, so it'll be waterproof.
Fascinating. And this is going on which day?
It'll be all 4 days. We have a temporary obstruction permit and waiver of the meter fees for the 4 days during the installation. So pretty excited to see what people think.
There's so much to say about that. You know, cars often kind of preclude conversations with passersby, whereas this is very pedestrian and bike-friendly.
Right.
People will just have the opportunity to meet their neighbors on the street.
Right. Yeah, that's, we're really trying to create a space for interaction, you know, not just with this installation, but with all the pieces. And I think the parklet is something that's going to be public. You know, it's going to be out on the street, very visible, and hopefully will inspire people to check out the other installations around downtown this weekend.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should speak with Jennifer next about her art.
Actually, my art is going to be outside on your wall. I'm doing a project called Surveillance, and I'm installing public paintings. They're door-sized, and they're going to be hung on the exterior alleyway for 4 days. And it's a series of paintings that sort of encapsulate what I feel like a lot of our society, how we function, which is basically documenting everything with iPads and iPhones and just never really being where we are, but just taking lots of pictures all the time. So I was in the Grand Canyon this summer and noticed when tourists got out of buses or vans or wherever they were coming from, they would walk over to the Grand Canyon, look through a device, take a picture, turn around and walk back on and not really experience anything. So I started taking pictures of people taking pictures and did a bunch of paintings based on people documenting. So they're portraits, but you can't really see faces. It's just they're hidden behind devices. So they'll be installed on your alley, and there's going to be motion sensor lighting. So as you walk through the alley, you're under surveillance also as the viewer.
That's so interesting. I mean, everything you've said, the Grand Canyon episode is certainly very kind of heart-wrenching, you know, the most beautiful monument in our country, and people can't really be there.
It's almost like a checklist. You go experience something and then status update it.
True.
So.
Yeah. And there's obviously the other side of surveillance that you mentioned. That with NSA spying and mm-hmm. all the rest, all of these digital photographs that we're taking are monitored.
Absolutely.
So the lighting mm-hmm. is made to appear that you have been taken a picture of, or?
There's a couple of settings I'm going to play with. There's one that is it's like a flashlight. So as you walk through, it's sort of like a pulsary light that I think would be interesting because it looks like security lighting. And so it'll be triggered as the viewer walks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the alley, of course, is a place where bad things sort of happen. And it has its own mystique.
Trouble ensues in alleys, yes.
Well, that's fascinating, pulling together two very different media. Lindsay, would you like to talk about some of the other events?
Yeah, we're hoping everything sort of inspires conversation and brings people together rather than, you know, art that, which I have no problem with, that is simply on a wall or people are like, oh, that's really beautiful. We're looking to, you know, create these atmospheres that allow people to talk about certain issues. For instance, one of the artists has created a virtual reality for chickens. So he'll have a fake storefront where he's basically pitching this fake business where he sells virtual reality gear for chickens who essentially live in tubes, wear headsets, and run around on little trackballs, and he calls it the virtual free range. So it's kind of dealing with the issue of us as human beings living more in a virtual world, and essentially these chickens in this hypothetical virtual free range would have actually more freedom than a lot of free range chickens. So he wants to inspire conversation around the idea of free range and the idea of living in virtual worlds. So,
have you experienced this virtual world?
He's been working, and I haven't. I've been in the computer program. He actually has like a trackball that people can run on, and you can actually wear the headsets, and they're positioned so you have like chicken eyes. You're seeing out of like the sides of your head, which I haven't had a chance to experience yet. So
that's right.
Yeah, all of it's going to be very exciting, and I'm excited to go see it all because it hasn't come together yet.
Yeah, chickens have a really fun way of running.
Yeah.
They sort of, you know, have their butts out.
Yeah.
And they're pedaling their feet.
Yeah.
And so. then they'll stop and look out of the side of their eye mm-hmm. and check things out. Oh, my goodness. That sounds so interesting.
Yeah. So, and then one of the other artists we have is, he's a graphic design professor at Iowa State, but he does sound installations. So he's going to be driving a van that'll be picking people up at Ryan's Park. and taking people on sound tours around Ames. So the tours will last about 10 minutes, and he's got different sound components within the van, and then places that he stops where people do little listening tours. So that should be pretty fun and interesting as well. So we got some diversity going on, and things that people have probably never experienced before that I think is going to be really fun.
There's an opening ceremony on Thursday. What is the opening ceremony going to be about at 7 o'clock?
I think we're all going to meet at Ryan's Park and just sort of congregate there, you know, have a moment where we're all sort of together, be able to talk to people, and then maybe at like 7:15 sort of disperse to our places, and people can take their little maps and start wandering around. We just thought it'd be fun to sort of get a little critical mass at the park to begin with at,
sure,
at the beginning, to sort of signal, hey, something's going on,
right,
here in Ames, you know, because a lot of these spaces are very hidden, up in top floors, in the back, in basements, and things like that, so they're not going to be very visible besides Ryan's and Jennifer's.
Well, I was going to ask you about the title, Art Vacancy.
Yeah.
You've found vacant spaces in, vacant commercial spaces, I should say, in Ames?
Yeah. Essentially, I just went around and scoped places and talked to landlords about places that I knew existed but necessarily hadn't ever seen, or you know, had for rent signs that have been up for a long time, and just asked them, you know, would you be willing to let us use this for 10 days to set up and 4 days to show? And surprisingly, a lot of people were really nice and generous about it, and we got it together. So there's definitely going to be places you haven't seen, maybe in years. My mom, I was telling her about one of the spaces, and she's like, oh, that used to be a bar when I was in college. But I've never seen it, and I don't think anybody my age has ever been down there underneath Luke Alon's, is what I'm talking about. And there's a really neat one in between the Octagon and the McClanahan building. It's kind of like Ames' only skywalk, even though it's maybe like 20 feet long. So it's a lot of really unique spaces, and you get to see things that is inside of these buildings that you've probably never seen before.
And speaking of bars, there's an event on Friday night,
yeah,
at the London Underground.
Yeah, we thought it'd be fun to sort of just have a little after party. We're going to have a DJ, one of your DJs, DJ Poe Toaster, at 9. So we'll be there and, you know, a little more relaxed atmosphere, be able to talk to people and enjoy ourselves after all this hard work.
And Lindsay, I see that you're listed as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Your performance is called Be Unbroken.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little about that?
Well, it's an installation piece. I don't really want to give away what the performance component is, but yeah, at 4 p.m. on Saturday, I would like as many people to gather in my space. We're going to do a little performance. So it's interactive, so people will be able to participate in that. Yeah, basically I create environments made out of my own garbage that I've been collecting for 2 years almost now. So yeah, I build these installations and immersive sort of environments.
And garbage is also featured in the Library of Backyard Ecology.
Yeah,
by Kristen Roach.
Yeah, we've definitely been hanging out. It's funny how people start to pick up on the same themes. Yeah, she's been collecting her junk mail for over a year now, and she's finally gotten a chance to turn that into a big installation project. And that's in a really neat space. It used to be the Des Moines Register's office in Ames. So it still has their old 70s decorations. And it's really kind of unique. And
300 Main Street, third floor.
Yeah. Huh. So her door says library on it. So she kind of worked with that as an element of the piece. And
so a lot of your artists are ISU-related people.
Yeah, actually, all three of us here today are in some way affiliated with Iowa State. Ryan is an undergrad engineer, but I keep telling him he's an artist. And then Jennifer over here is a lecturer. She teaches drawing and painting at Iowa State. So but I would say it's about half and half, Iowa State people and then local just community members. So it's an interesting mix. And part of my mission as being a MFA student at Iowa State was to sort of start bridging the gap between Iowa State people, artists in particular, and community artists. Since we're such a small little group, I felt like it would be great if we all knew each other, if we all would work together, since we're only going to be stronger if we can do that. So I think this event's really great in that way. So we have hopefully both worlds showing up on Main Street,
yeah.
the university crowd and the community crowd. So it should be nice.
Well, and the space on Main Street is also kind of already bridging that gap between the university, the geographic gap between our two parts. What is people, I'm sure, are kind of wondering, what is that space? It's a big window front on the block right around the corner from us here at KJY.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was their sort of dream, was that it was going to be this outreach extension of the university into the community. I would say it's been slow starting, and I'm hoping that this fall we'll really get it going and have continuous programming there and start doing workshops and things like that, more community events. But you know how things go sometimes, a little slower than you'd like them to. So,
but I love the word extension, because we use that term, and that term is so well-funded mm-hmm. when it comes to the sciences. And the, you know, the whether it's domestic sciences or agricultural sciences, we fund extension. But then, you know, maybe there are other cultural extensions that need to take place, and it's great that you're really working on that angle.
Yeah, I think art's one of the things that can definitely bridge the gap, because you know, a biologist tries to talk about biology to somebody who doesn't know anything about it. It might be a little terrifying. But I think art could kind of, you know, be universal, and people can connect over that. So I think it's really unique that that's kind of where they started with the whole being on Main Street, was with the artists.
Yeah. I saw a TED Talk once where some dancers were interpreting atomic motion for the audience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, rather than trying to teach people this is what happens through mm-hmm. language, it was through bodies and movement.
Yeah.
Will there be any dancing besides the dancing, the dance party at the London Underground?
You know, I'm not sure what everybody has planned. There could be some surprises. I think there's definitely a video with some dancing, but I don't know if there'll be any live dancing. We'll see.
Well, some people might need to show up and take care of that.
Yeah.
So you're in the MFA program?
Yes.
At Iowa State? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you'd like to say about this event?
We were laughing because everybody's been saying, well, we've been hearing about this project and, you know, we're excited about it, but we're not exactly sure what it is. And in the Register the other day, they made some quote like that, we're not sure what it is, but you should go. And so we're kind of just riding that way, like, you're not going to figure it out until you just come. So you might as well just show up and check it out for yourself. So.
Well, that's pretty cool. Experiential knowledge is the most prioritized here. Okay. Well, would either of you, Jennifer or Ryan, like to say something else?
You know what? I think Lindsay's done a good job of wrapping it up. I'm really excited to be a part of the event, and I think it's hopefully going to inspire some discussions that need to be occurring here in Ames, and really excited to see a lot of people come out and join.
I do. I think it could be a model for small towns all over Iowa, you know, to have events like this where they take over abandoned spaces and reinfuse them with life and with culture. So proud of her.
That wraps it up for us today at Local Talk. We started out the morning with a bit of news about the mayor, Ann Campbell. She had a heart attack yesterday and was taken to Mary Greeley Hospital. She underwent surgery, and it was reported that the surgery went well. So we are optimistic for her health and thinking of her. I was your host today, Greta Anderson. I spoke in the first half with Sandra Luft, who is the organizer of Kidical Mass, a once-a-month event where kids and families get out on their bikes and just take over the streets for 3 miles. And by the way, that is occurring this Saturday, April 26th. People are meeting at Brookside Park at 10 a.m. We then spoke with Lindsay Nissen, MFA student at Iowa State University, who is organizing a complex and involved event for 4 days starting tomorrow, Thursday, called Art Vacancy. And there are at least 10 things going on throughout those 4 days. If you want to come downtown and experience it, you should aim for 7 to 9 on Thursday and Friday, or 1 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And there it is. You can listen to this show and all of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of our local talk shows we've produced since we went on the air in 2012. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information, and he's pretty speedy. There you'll find lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned in our shows, so we will have the information about Art Vacancy and also Kidical Mass linked to this show. If you've enjoyed the show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses. Of course, we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback either by phone, 515-292-2878, or by email, khoiradio@gmail.com, with news in the subject line. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.